Welcome to the Level Up Podcast. I'm your host, Paul Alex. I went from being a cop to an eight-figure entrepreneur that helps average people like you and me make money every single day. I created this podcast to help you get motivated and to crush your goals. Let's win together. Remember, I have your six. Get ready to level up right now. Hey guys, and welcome back to the Level Up Podcast. This is Paul Alex, and today we have another special guest. Guys, we have a family member of mine, aka my law enforcement family here, and I love talking to other Leos, law enforcement officers, okay, for you guys that are civilians out there. She goes by the name of Catherine. Catherine comes from an immigrant family, went to the Army, transitioned into law enforcement, became sergeant of the police, and for her current law enforcement department here in Florida. And if she wants to tell the department, she could, but I'm not going to say nothing. And from there, she's doing some great things on social media. You know, she has about 250,000 people watching her live on Twitch, social media platform, which is remarkable. So she's actually learned to monetize that on her own. She currently has a pretty decent following on Instagram, but with 250,000 people on there. And she's an advocate for women empowerment, for mental health, for fitness, just like I am. We're talking about our fitness journey and just overall how law enforcement officers and departments should start using social media. Catherine, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm so glad to be here, honestly.
No. It is. And trust me, like I said, you know, I've been checking out your socials. You're doing a lot of great things. I'm highly impressed because, you know, I wasn't on social media for 8 years, as you know, us talking together and me going on there. You know, I'm not a selfie guy. I'm not. I always tell my wife, I was like, babe, I'm the ugly dude. Like, you got to go ahead and take the photos. And, yeah. You know, my wife likes doing all that jazz. But let's go ahead and start with your background, okay? Your background before you got into law enforcement, and then we'll go into the journey as you tell us your background. So start from the beginning when you, your family, where you're from, going into the military.
So actually, I am from Nicaragua. Mm-hmm. It's in Central America for people that don't know. I moved here when I was 15. My mom came to the United States before I did. So obviously, it was like a big transition coming from, you know, like a third world country to a first world country. Like even the streets were very different. After that, you know, I was part of the Police Explorer program for my department that I currently work for. So I was like 15 and I was a cadet with them. I also did the Air Force JRTC in high school. And because of that, that's when I decided, you know, like I want to go into the military. I joined the Army at 18, right out of high school.
What'd your parents think about that?
My mom was, like, very nervous about it because, you know, especially during that time, it was in 2008, you know, there was an ongoing war.
Yeah.
So
you were ready to go to war.
I was ready to go to war.
You're wild. All right, go ahead.
And the thing was that, like, I was, you know, I came here to the United States with a permanent residence, so my mom was, I was trying to figure out a way how to become a citizen too. And my mom was like, oh, you know, you can just marry somebody. And then I'm like, I could marry somebody or go to war. I'm going to go to war. That's
what a beast. What a beast. She's like, I'm just going to go to war.
I'm just going to go to war.
Yeah.
You know, that tells you a little bit about my personality.
That's great.
So I ended up in Fort Campbell, Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
I'm 18 years old. My English is super broken. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I don't understand anybody. Nobody understands me. And I decided to be a mechanic because I was really into cars. I wanted to learn about cars. My first car that I fell in love with was a 1990 5.0 Mustang. And I didn't have a way to go to college either. So I'm like, the only way that I can really learn, I'm like, the Army is going to teach me for free, you know?
Yeah.
I'm going to become a citizen, and I get education. I was like, oh, yeah.
Catherine, how many times did you watch Fast and the Furious?
Probably like 87, Tokyo Drift.
Is that what inspired you to go ahead and want to be the mechanic?
Yeah, honestly, yeah.
All right.
I was so in love with cars at the time. Like, right now, I'm a big JDM fan. Yeah. Like, if I had the money, I'd buy me an R34. That's the first thing I'm going to buy.
Damn.
You know?
Yeah, you got a milli over there. Like, what? All right. So, all right. So you go into the military. Yeah. How long you served for?
I was in the military for 4 years, so I served, you know, my contract. I ended up getting out because I had my son. My son was born in Fort Campbell, Kentucky.
Oh, nice.
Yes. And, you know, the best thing that I have. My son is my biggest motivation. Everything that I do it with my son in mind and how I can make his life better compared to the life that I had.
Yeah.
You know, I literally had a volcano in the back of my house.
Yeah.
You know, I lived in the jungle.
Yeah.
So, you know, seeing like from where I came from to like how his life is very different, very like two different worlds, you know. I get out, I come back to Miami. I started using my GI Bill to go to FIU.
Yep.
I wanted to, you know, start college. But I realized that I wasn't making money because I can't go to school and work and take care of my son and do everything all at once.
Yeah.
So I do drop out of college.
Wow.
And then that's when I'm like, I have to go into the police academy.
Yeah.
I go to the police academy.
What year was this?
This is in 2014. I get out of the military in 2012. So like for like those 2 years, I was actually trying to get hired as a mechanic. But every time I would go and apply somewhere, you know, obviously the stereotype and everything, the people would be like, oh yeah, have your boyfriend come and apply. And I'd be like, no, it's for me. I'm the mechanic. And I would never get a call back.
That's wild.
I would apply to a bunch of different like mechanic shops and I would never get a call back.
Yeah.
So that's why I was like, okay, you know, let me start college. Then I drop out of college and I joined the academy.
When you joined the police department back in 2014, did you go through the process one time or several times?
No. So this is the thing, right? I go to the academy self-sponsored.
Ah.
I paid my way through the academy. I didn't go through a police department.
So for the viewers right now, because, you know, I get a lot of people that always hit me up in the DMs. They're like, hey, dude, should I be a cop in 2025? I'm like, dude, you're not going to do it for the money. You're going to do it because you just have a good heart and you just want to be a badass. But with that being said, okay, for the people that are watching, what is the difference between you know, you paying, I guess, to go through the academy, whether an agency paying for it, what is the biggest difference?
So the biggest difference is like, since you basically go and get the certification to become a police officer on your own. When you get hired by a department, the department is paying for that. The specific department is paying for your way to become certified.
Got it.
So that means that once you become certified, usually departments give you a contract that you, since we're sending you, you have to stay with us at least 2 years, for example.
Okay. Right? That makes sense.
So you have to, you basically make a contract with that department that like, I'm going to put you through it, so you're going to stay working for me.
Yeah.
Now, as a self-sponsored, since I pay my way through it, I was certified, I could apply with whatever department I wanted to.
Right.
And see who would hire me first. That's basically what it was.
Got it.
So you have the option to pick whoever you want to work for. And it's a lot easier because a lot of the departments, they're going to be like, okay, I don't have to send her to the academy. I don't have to spend the money. She's already certified. She can already just start training.
Got it.
Rather than with a department, they have to wait until you graduate and, you know, and then you can go ahead and training because usually the academy is about 6 months here in Florida. Usually in most states is 6 months. But I already had done all that, so I could just start right away.
So for the people that are looking to get into the academy, whether they go ahead and they pay themselves to go through it or they go through an agency, what would be three tips that you would give the audience right now? They're about to go to the academy. Anybody that's about to go to the academy, like, should they work on their mindset? Should they work on their fitness? Like, what would you tell somebody, like the younger you basically, three tips before going into the academy?
My first tip will always going to be physical fitness.
And why?
And because physical fitness, being a cop is not just putting on the uniform, having a gun, and then, oh, I'm going to go out there and arrest people.
Right.
You know, you have to be physically fit. If you're physically fit, you are mentally fit also. Because being a cop, it is very tiresome.
Yeah.
And what a lot of people don't understand is that we work so many hours.
Yeah.
I work between 76 to 80 hours a week sometimes. So if you're physically fit, you are able to be not always tired mentally, because it's not just the physical part, it's the mental part. So always physical fitness, and not just to the academy, but like stay with it after the academy. Because a lot of people just train for the academy because you're running every day and you're doing this every day. And then when they get out in the streets, they just like put it in the back burner and they don't go back to the gym ever again.
Yeah.
So try to stay that, you know, and so physically fit. To never forget who you are before you became a cop, you know?
Yeah.
So whatever hobbies you had before, if you were a fishing guy, if you were, you know, somebody that likes drawing, painting, to like not forget that. Because I feel like a lot of people, once they become cops,
they lose themselves.
They lose themselves, and then that becomes their identity.
Yeah.
And that's all they do.
Oh, you're right.
You know?
Yeah.
And then I read this really good book that is called Emotional Survival of Law Enforcement. And it talks about that, how, you know, you have like that adrenaline desired all the time, that when you're like not working,
yeah,
all you want to do is talk about it because you want to re-experience that adrenaline rush.
Right.
So that's where all the cops get together and like, hey, you know, I arrested this guy and I did this and I did that, because they want to re-experience that adrenaline, because that's all they become.
Yeah.
So as long as you don't forget who you are afterwards and you stay true to yourself. And my third thing is always going to be family.
Mm.
Family is more important, especially like if you have a spouse. Sometimes like, oh, you want to pick up overtime and you're constantly working and working and working and working, that you're not making time for your family. Because right. I remember that I used to do that. You know, I did it with my son. Because I would get home from work and be like, hey, mom, can we go to a park? And I'd be like, later, Bobby, I'm tired.
Yeah.
You know, and then that later would never come.
Yeah.
Or like my mom's birthday. And then, I picked up overtime. Sorry, I'll take you to dinner next week. And then next week would never come. So always have like make plans and make dates with your family, with your spouse or whoever. And not focus so much on overtime all the time, because the overtime is always going to be there.
Yeah.
It's always going to be there.
No, you're right. I lost a lot of personal time, you know, mental health, physical, spiritual.
Yeah.
And I gave it all for the overtime. Mm-hmm. 80 to 100 hour work weeks for the first 5 years. Okay. It was tough. Mm-hmm. And I aged a lot. I always tell people, cops go in there as kids and they come out as adults. Mm-hmm. But okay, so with that being said, how many years did you currently serve, or you're still on the job?
Yes.
I know you're still sergeant of police. So currently right now you're on 10 years, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
I just hit 10 years, yes.
So 10 years. Okay, so let's go ahead and talk about your fitness journey. So beginning of the year, you really emphasize going ahead and working on your fitness because it's so important to you. So what were some things that you did to actually get to where you're at right now?
So I always had like an on and off relationship with fitness, obviously because of life, you know, work and all that stuff, especially when you're working 80 hours a week, you're sleeping like three and then, you know. So at the beginning of the year, my department for the first time actually had a weight loss challenge, right?
And this was when?
This was December. They make the post. The challenge started on January 7th, and it was going to end at the end of the month. You know, so you were going to do a weigh-in, and then, you know, the beginning and a weigh-in at the end.
How many people applied?
Oh, so many. So many. And they had, like, two categories. They had the female and the male categories, yeah. Right? So I was going to the gym every day, you know, working out, doing my thing like I usually do. And then when I read the post, I was like, damn, should I sign up? I was thinking to myself, should I sign up? And there's somebody there, they're like, don't sign up. You're not going to win.
Damn, throwing you under the bus, huh? That's the way it goes.
Oh, man, that hit me so hard. I feel like, I thought to myself, like, just punch me in the face. Like, you know, I'd rather you do that, like, than tell me this. Like, so then I was like, that just flipped a switch in me. Yeah. And I felt doubted. I felt like, in my mind, I was like, who are you to doubt what I can or I can't do?
Right.
So I ran into the office and I signed up. So I ended up losing 18 pounds in those 25 days.
Okay.
I took it so serious. Like, I have never taken anything so serious in my life, because I was like, I can't lose.
So my question is, I mean, you're busy enough. You're a mom. You're a sergeant of police. I mean, you got personal things going on in your life, control chaos, right? So what did you do? What was your routine to actually lose that weight? Because a lot of people want to know this. A lot of people, okay. I even want to know this, right? Because I had to go ahead and do all types of things. I had to pay people a lot of money so for them to give me instructions on how to lose the weight that I lost this year.
The biggest thing, honestly, when you are in a in a fitness journey is the fact that there's a lot of things that you have to sacrifice. Mm. And one of them is the only thing that you have is time, right?
Right.
I was waking up at 4 o'clock in the morning. Okay. I was going for a run in the morning. I would do a run around my house because I live inside a golf course.
Yeah.
So I would run the golf course. And mind you, running a mile is like what? Like, even if you're just starting, 10, 15 minutes that it would take you. It's not going to take you, you know, you don't have to do 2 hours at the gym for you to, like, be able to do a fitness journey. Then I think that that's the biggest misconception, that people think that you have to be at the gym, like, 3-5 hours, and it's not. So I would just take, like, 30 minutes at the beginning. I would go run, do a mile, and then I would come back, and I would do some type of, like, you know, jumping jacks, push-ups, things like that, you know, just to start the day. I would take a shower. But I was fasting from 8 p.m. the night before all the way till noon.
Yeah.
At noon, and all I was eating was chicken breast. No vegetables, no rice, no
nothing. See, I can't do that. I can't do the whole chicken breast every day.
I know.
How is that sustainable?
It's not that it's sustainable, but like at the end, like my mindset was so focused on it.
Yeah.
That I didn't care if it tasted bad. I didn't care if I got bored of it. I didn't care because I was not going to lose. Mm. I refused to like sign up. Because in my mind, I was thinking, I was like, people are going to be like, oh, Sarge gave up.
Yeah.
Oh, she gave up. She lost. And I would tell that to myself all the time. And I was like, I can't have that.
Yeah.
And that was my biggest motivation. It was not to lose. So I learned how to do my macros. I learned, you know, how to do the whole protein and carbs and all that stuff, how many calories I had to do. I was drinking a whole gallon of water a day. And I made sure that I was doing between 7,000 to 10,000 steps a day because that helps a lot more than having to go to the gym every day, especially when you're busy. I got me a little treadmill. I will go walk my dogs, you know. So I would sit here, there, and, like, read my emails or even when I was, like, just doing anything in the little treadmill, just walking. And I would walk everywhere, you know, take the stairs, not take the elevator, things like that, you know, park really far. Even when I was going to calls, I would park a little further just so I could walk more, you know?
Smart.
If, you know, during my lunch break, luckily our police department does have a gym.
Mm-hmm.
So during my lunch break, I will go to the gym. Obviously, you know how it is. Calls permitting when you're on the road.
Yep.
If it wasn't busy and I could actually take my lunch, I would go to, you know, to the station. So that's what I started implementing every day and just kind of like implement that throughout the day to be able to do like an overall of the fitness thing.
Yeah. It makes sense. You got to become savvy with the strategy that you're using in order to get the fitness in, because I'm going to tell you something. It's not easy.
It's not easy.
You know, I'm currently 37, guys, and, you know, I've been struggling with, you know, trying to stay fit my entire life, especially with my wife's cooking, you know, I got to eat it all. But it's because I want to. It's good. All right. So babe, don't get mad at me. With that being said, okay, so you're killing the fitness portion of your life, and I always tell people this: this is like a successful person is somebody who's successful in their mindset, their core values, they have a good heart, they dominate fitness because I mean, especially in the police world, you have to be fit because people do not respect fat cops. They don't. They don't. Let's be real. They don't, you know? And I'm not, hey, guys, I'm probably going to get a lot of heat, you know, because there's a lot of cops on social media that like to bash each other, and that's just what it is. But it's the truth, you know? It's just you have to lose weight because that could be your life. That could be your life, right?
Yeah.
You know, how many times, and there's stats on this. How many times do officers get in shootings? Because the suspect is determines based on how they look, how they're perceived, right? That, okay, this guy's fat or he has not an organized uniform or he doesn't even shine his boots. It's all psychology.
It's all about the command presence.
It's
that
the command presence, right? You're fit. You look good. You act good. You bring that level of confidence. You're like, yo, I just told you to do this. Compared to, sir, can you please? Hey, sometimes you got to get down, right?
You have to.
You're the police.
Especially here in Miami.
Everywhere, you know? Mm-hmm. But, no, I love that mindset. No, that's good. I love that. It's refreshing. Okay. It's refreshing, you know?
Yeah, especially as a female officer, too.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm a big advocate that I think that women cops, not just women cops, but like women in general, we should train, you know? I've also been on and off with like jiu-jitsu training and things like that because of that factor. Because I feel like I never wanted to be put in a situation that sometimes, you know, backup might not be able to come.
100%.
I might be in a situation where I might not be able to reach my radio. Yeah. Where I might not be able to ask for emergency backup. And I need to be able to hold my own.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
Because things happen, and things happen in a second.
Quick.
Am I very vigilant about how I go about things? Absolutely.
Yeah.
I am the kind of cop because of the fact that I know I'm a female.
Yeah.
Can I hold my own? Absolutely. But do I understand also that you are stronger than me?
Yeah.
I do.
Yeah.
So I am the kind of cop that I keep my distance very far from people.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to allow anybody to be like arm's length that I feel like you could just grab me unexpectedly.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think it's ingrained in us, especially with the level of experience that you and I have.
Right.
You know, I know before the podcast, we were talking about all the specialized units that you actually have been in, right?
Yes.
So if the audience is listening right now, you know, she's just not a regular beat cop. Yeah, she's a sergeant, but she had to work her way up just like any good cop, right?
Mm-hmm.
So with that being said, what were a couple of the units that you did before you hit sergeant?
So the first unit that I went in was CRT, which is our crime response team.
Yep.
These are the guys that are in the black chargers, wearing all black.
The hitters.
You know? Those are the little jump out boys.
Jump out boys.
At the time, when I started, there was only two females that were in that unit.
Yeah.
And this was like back in like 2017, I want to say. So it was only two females. It was like eight of us, one sergeant. And boy, that was like the best time of my life, honestly. I had so much fun in that unit because all in that unit that we were doing at the time, honestly, were like dope and guns.
Yeah.
You know?
So for people that you're like dope and guns, like your primary focus was to take down drug dealers and to go against, you know, people that would like shoot people and the violent offenders and the gang members and all that jazz, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you guys would get assigned to like high profile cases?
At the time we didn't, but then we started like working with the detectives once they started like, you know, when they will have like somebody that they will look for, they will try to find it for them, you know, especially with like the burglary units that we used to work a lot closer to, because at least in our department, the robbery unit was very, very, they were very united.
Yeah.
So they will do their own thing and nobody will mess with robbery because like, that's like the, you know, robbery is the highest thing, you know, because nobody...
The cream of the crop.
Yes, because nobody robs anybody by mistake, you know?
Right.
So after that unit, I ended up actually going to detective and I went into burglary.
Nice.
Then I became a detective in burglary. While I was in burglary, I did a bunch of classes with, like, the Secret Service and, you know, all these other agencies because I was trying to obviously learn the most that I could.
Of course, yeah.
Because in burglary, then I helped create like this program for the whole, you know, detective unit that is called SCCTV Squad. So it was to teach the detectives how to be able to like download all the cameras for cases and to actually be able to testify on them in court. Because the first thing that any good attorney is going to do is try to throw out the videos.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So I actually went and I got classes on how to be able to like download videos from different type of like, you know, CCTV systems and all that stuff and be able to like testify on it on court.
Yeah.
After that, I end up going to my favorite unit. I end up going to homicide.
Wow.
So I was...
How many years in before you went to homicide?
Three.
Wow. That's fast.
Four.
That's still fast. Because a lot of people, especially in law enforcement, they said that you need a minimum of 5 years. At least back my department in Oakland, they were like, you need a minimum of 5 years on the street in order for you to get that good experience. And then by OG standards, right? They would say like, yo, like then you could go into specialized unit. But with me, I mean, very similar. You know, I was voluntold to go into like RCRT, CRT-5. It was like deep East Oakland, so it was gang infested, guns, dope. But then I transitioned into narcotics task force and undercover, all that stuff. It's the greatest time ever.
Yeah.
And I know it sounds weird. We're all like, oh, it's good, it's fun. I mean, it is, guys. I'm not going to lie. It's the greatest job in the world. Greatest job in the world. I mean, let's just be honest, right?
Yeah.
So with that being said, okay, let's go back to Homicide. So you're in Homicide.
Yes.
Okay. And are you like the youngest detective in there?
Yes, I really was. During that time, our police department was very, it was
very
like
young?
Very under minimum. No. Like we were having
officers?
People leave left and right to all the departments. The Homicide unit had two people.
No way.
That's the reason how I ended up going to Homicide.
Oh, that's wild.
Because nobody wanted to be in Homicide. Okay. And the reason why nobody wanted to be in Homicide, obviously, besides
it's a lot of work.
Dealing with the dead.
It's a lot of work.
We were getting called out all the time because our Homicide unit wasn't just Homicide. We also did anything that had to do with victims' crimes.
Oh, okay.
Not special victims, but victims' crimes. So
right.
Rapes, assaults, you know, anything that it was being done to a person up to death.
Right. So shootings, know? All that
shootings,
jazz.
Stabbings.
Major crimes.
Yes. Yeah. Major crimes.
When so you were busy. You were busy. You were getting called out.
There was times that I would get home from my call out and I was sitting down in my bed and my sergeant was calling me again. I need to come out again.
Damn.
I need to come out again.
Yeah.
I need to come out again.
Yeah, that's rough.
Yeah.
That's rough.
But it was honestly the best time.
You learned a lot.
Oh,
you got a lot of experience.
I learned a lot. I got bit.
Yeah. So you got bit. How'd you get bit? Tell me about that.
Okay. So during the time in Homicide, obviously, you have to do a lot of training. Mm. I went to a death investigation class at the medical examiner's office.
Yeah.
For those people that don't know what the medical examiner's office is, basically where we take the dead and they do the autopsies and they try to figure out the cause of death of a person. So they teach you about all the types of death of people. One of the things that they teach you there is about bite marks and how you testify on bite marks and how bite marks became part of something that you can bring into court as evidence and that they're very unique to a person, just like fingerprints.
Wow.
They're a unique identifier. So this very elderly man comes and he starts talking to us about bite mark. They're like, hey, we're going to go to the morgue. You know, he gets, you know, a cadaver and he brings like this like mold of like teeth, but they're like attached to like a clamp, right? So he grabs the, you know, the cadaver's arm and he bites it like really hard. You can hear the crunch when he closes it because he's supposed to have like the same amount of pressure than, you know, like an actual bite.
Yeah.
He starts talking about the indentation, how it looks, you know, on the person that is deceased. So he's like, now I need a live volunteer. And I was like, me right here all day.
Yeah.
Bite me, sir. So why did I have no idea? He does the same clamp on my arm. It hurt. All I could think, I was like, I cannot cry in front of everybody. I'm not going to cry in front of everybody. But in the inside, I was crying because all I could hear is like the crunch on my arm. And then he starts showing like obviously the difference, you know, because you have the blood flow, how it turns red, how it turns purple,
right.
Et cetera, because we leave. When we come back from lunch, he's putting the presentation of like the biggest case that has to do with bite marks, which is Ted Bundy.
Yeah.
Ted Bundy got indicted over a bite mark. He was the first case ever that a bite mark was introduced into evidence in court, and that's what got him indicted, his bite mark.
Wow.
Right? So then this man, for the first time, actually introduces himself, and he's like, oh, my name is Dr. Richard. He is the doctor that took the mold print from Ted Bundy, and the bite mark, the mold that he bit me with, was Ted Bundy's teeth.
Oh, that's pretty badass. That's a great story.
Yes.
So for the viewers right now that are not really into, you know, the criminal investigations or the historic serial killers, who was Ted Bundy?
So Ted Bundy was one of the biggest serial killer in the history of the United States.
Yeah.
He was using his looks as a, you know, very handsome man to pick up college women, and he would basically, you know, rape them and then he would murder them.
Yeah.
So the one case that he got indicted on is because he bit the girl's butt cheek.
Wow.
So when they go and they get his, you know, his mold, you know, the print of his mouth, they show how her, you know, bite mark and his bite mark, it was a perfect match because he had a chipped tooth.
Mm.
So that, which ended up in my arm when he bit me with it.
Wow.
And that's how he ended up.
That's amazing. I've never done a class like that. Now I learned something new. You educated me.
Yeah, it's,
I love that.
And that's the thing, like, you know, a lot of people get the misconception of what, like, police work is also because of everything that is in social media. And, you know, like, you're watching GSP and all they're doing is pitting cars everywhere. And so people think that that's all police work is,
yeah.
And it's really not. Like, you deal with so much things, which is the reason why I'm a very, very big advocate when it comes to mental health. Because at the end of the day, people call the cops on, like, their saddest, their most traumatic days, their worst days. I've been in the most traumatic days in people's lives.
Right.
And they have cried to me. they have, you know, I've helped people when they've taken their last breath.
Right.
You know, and I am the last person that they see. But then afterwards, I got to go, you know, and deal with a call because, you know, somebody is parked in my driveway and like, oh, my God, this cop is being a jerk.
Yeah.
And then they don't understand that 10 minutes before that, I had to deal with like somebody's tragic death, unfortunately. So people don't understand how that as a person, it taxes you little by little. You know, and it's all like, oh, because I pay your salary.
Yeah.
You know, I pay taxes. I pay your salary.
Yeah.
And we're the customer service that people don't want at right. the end of the day.
No.
We're the cleanup crew.
I was going to say, you're doing the dirty work.
Yeah.
That no one wants to do. So, Catherine, let me ask you this. How are you taking care of your mental health? Because mental health to me, I mean, it's huge. It's huge. Like, you know, I've seen a lot of shit, working 7 years in Oakland, California. And it was one of those things, like, I remember my stepdad, he would always love hearing my stories. He'd be like, hey, what happened today? And
yeah.
He'd be like, oh, shit, that shit sounds fun. Oh, my God, that's amazing. Oh, that's crazy, right? But I would always hide it from my mother. Because
yes.
my mother, I never wanted her to worry about me.
And
I've had so many close encounters with death and shit. And it just never passed through my mind, like, damn, like, what am I doing risking my life, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it was one of those things, like, to be honest, it was more of the politics in the department that drove me away from law enforcement. And then also how liberal freaking California is. But with that being said, I'm not getting into politics, but I'm just saying, guys. I'm just saying. That's why I like Florida. They allow me to do carry conceal out here, you know, and it's the American way, okay? But with that being said, what do you do to take care of your mental health?
Honestly, like, fitness was one of the first things that I started doing to take care of my mental health, you know. The fitness, and believe it or not, I actually do play video games.
Yeah.
I do. I actually did start a Discord community. I have, like, over 400 members there.
Yeah.
And because when I was in the military, right, this is how I've played video games my whole life. But when I was in the military and I was pregnant, I was by myself living in Kentucky. My husband at the time, he was deployed, so I was alone and pregnant. I had no family around me in Kentucky, okay? So I became very, very depressed because I was alone.
Of course.
And since I was pregnant, I wasn't going to work because I was on maternity leave.
Right.
You know, because I would go over there, do some clerical work, and come back. I started playing a game named World of Warcraft.
Okay.
All right? And then I actually started meeting, like, people online because you have, like, a clan and all this, and you meet people online, you talk to them. And I've made friends since 2010 that are my friends still now online that I've never met in person.
Yeah.
But I know their whole lives. Right. I know their wife's names, their family's name. We sent pictures and everything. So I realized how, honestly, this gaming community helped me because when I felt alone and I felt sad, I could jump in the game and I could talk to them and we can just, like, you know, shit the shit and just talk shit. So that's why I created the Discord. So every night when I game and I do my streaming, I have like 10, 20 people in the Discord and we just talk and we play. And I have so many people hit me up afterwards and they're like, thank you. Like, I don't feel alone. I feel like, you know, every time that I'm sad, now I've made all these friends. I've made all these connections. And my Discord has been blowing up. That's what it's been doing. Everybody's sending pictures of their family and talking. It's very different when you have like a gaming community compared to like any other community, you know?
Yeah.
It's very, because you can make that friendship with people that you never even met in person.
No, I'm a big believer in that. I mean, especially, you know, my story, we were talking for quite a bit before the podcast, but I wasn't on social media for 8 years.
Right.
I wasn't on social media for 8 years. And let's be honest, it's because everybody at the police department was like, wow, influencers is not a real job. Like, this is not all this stuff. Let's be honest, right?
Yeah, there's still that stigma with police work.
Of course,
and social media.
Of course. But the thing is, just like, you know, here's the thing, right? People will always hate no matter what you do. People hated on me when I started with one of my first ventures, which was not the sexiest business, but it got my bills paid, right? And then I was just like, you know what? Let me go ahead and just educate myself on digital marketing, which is huge now. It's huge. And it's the gold rush.
That's the way now.
It's the way now. And that's going to be the trend. And people don't understand that, right? Especially like in the next 5 years, it's actually pretty scary because AI is coming into effect massively. So there's going to be a lot of people that are going to lose their jobs and they're going to wish they knew the skill set. And I always tell people, it's just like right now, if you only have one source of income, you're only one step away from poverty. Yep. And it's true. I always tell people that because I've seen so many people lose their jobs over stupid shit. And it happens, right?
Yeah. And especially in our job. Because
exactly.
Let me tell you, like, I got to a point where I was relieved of duty in my police department.
Yeah.
I was relieved of duty for 13 months. Mm-hmm. And even though they were paying me, I wasn't allowed to work overtime. I wasn't obviously allowed to do anything. And that it's when I started thinking, like, damn, like, I don't have any other source of income. I need to have something else just in case, or even like make it a primary thing, because like it's
something happens.
And that's the problem when it comes to police work and why we suffer so much in the mental health part, because we're so always like, okay, I need to work overtime. I need to, you know, pay this, pay that. So I need this overtime, that overtime. And then you have departments that have limitations on overtime, you know? So it's like, what do you do then?
Yeah.
You know, are you going to burn yourself out, you know, mentally, physically, emotionally, that you can't do anything else besides just be a robot and work all day long?
I mean, that was me.
That was me.
Mm-hmm. I was literally first 5 years, 80 to 100 hour work weeks. And I was doing it like nothing because I was younger.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's not sustainable. It's not sustainable.
Mind you, I'm 35.
Yeah.
Okay. And I even got certified as a police dispatcher to be a police dispatcher in my police department to work more overtime.
That's wild. But it also shows that you're proactive.
Yeah, and that's
respect,
the thing.
Respectfully.
I get it.
Yeah.
But it was also that, like, I got to the point that I was working 80 hours a week.
Yeah.
And then I was sleeping like 2-3 hours. I was not seeing my son, because when I was working in as a dispatcher, it was from 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. So my son will be alone all the time.
Of course.
I wasn't spending time with him. I wasn't doing anything that he wasn't working.
Right.
I was basically living at work.
Yeah.
And I would just go and say hi to my house.
I know.
Basically.
I know. And people are like, you know, they're so proud of, oh, I got a house. And I'm like, what's the point of having a house if
you're
never
see
it? You know? And that's where I was at. That's where I was at, you know. I started investing in real estate at the age of 22, and every 3 years I would go ahead and sell that property, buy a bigger property or a better neighborhood, right? So keep building that equity. And by the time I was like around 28, 29, I was in one of the best neighborhoods in the Bay Area. It was $1 million home. People were like, dude, what are you doing? You working for the cartel? I was like, no, bro. I was taking down the cartel, all that stuff, right? And I was never home. I was like, what's the point? I wasn't living the American dream anymore. I was living the American trap.
Yep.
And that's what a lot of police officers don't understand right now. I mean, that's what I'm telling you guys, especially for all you youngsters. If you're trying to get into law enforcement right now, you know, you're in the military, that's cool. Go do it because of purpose, for fulfillment. If it makes you happy, go to. I was the happiest when I was a cop.
100%.
And people are like, bro, you were happy as a cop. I was like, hell yeah. It was a dream job.
Yeah,
you know,
you have to do the job for the job.
Yeah, for the job. You gotta,
I mean, don't get me wrong. You can make money.
You can
make so much money as a police officer, 100%. But it's blood money. That's what I call it. I call it blood money.
It is straight up blood money.
I call it blood money because you are always at work.
Yep, 100%.
You're always there. And unfortunately, that's when mistakes happen.
Yep.
People become complacent.
Yep.
And you go to the same call over and over and over and over again. And then, you know, It's not sustainable because you could get hurt or somebody else could get hurt because you are tired. You're human. Your body takes a toll. Your mind takes a toll.
Yep.
And always having to be at work, you know?
Absolutely.
So, I mean, I had to figure out a way how to get out.
Yep.
Listen, my Instagram is fairly new. I have a year on my account.
Yeah.
It's been a year.
Yep.
So for me to have 257,000 followers in a year where I've basically like not even like done much is crazy. And that's what I was telling you. Like, just even me being here in this podcast with you.
Yeah.
I realized of how important social media is.
It's huge.
And how you can get the right message out if you use it properly.
Yeah.
You know?
So with that being said, let's go ahead and talk about social media and law enforcement. So here's my perspective on things, guys. So back in, let's say like towards the end of 2021, I remember I was sitting in the department and I was talking to one of my captains. And I told you this story before the pod is I was telling the captain, I was like, hey man, like, you know, I'm trying to really like dig into this whole social media thing because I was going to launch one of my first digital companies. It was called ATM Together. And and he's just like, he's like, what is social media? Like, how could law enforcement use it? is what the captain was asking me. And I was like, well, Cap, like, you know, I think it's super important that every law enforcement department agency in the United States should leverage social media where it's interactive with their avatar, like with the clientele that's actually looking to be the police, number one, because you're able to give them clarity about like the process, the inside look of what it is to be a cop, the good, right? Instead of the media, which is bad, right?
Correct.
Usually, because the media, let's be honest, why is the news so popular? Why is the news so popular? Because they show the bad. And why do people so interested in the bad? Because they're chismosos. Let's be honest, right? They like to gossip. That's just what it is, right? Like my mom, my dad, they call me. They're like, oh, my God, hurricane's going to hit your house in Florida. I'm like, Mom, I'm cool. Like, I'm outside by my pool. Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. So at the end of the day, you know, media paints this picture of the police as an authority figure. Oh, man, we're beating people out here. Nah, guys. Those are small incidents that happens in every industry. Right. Mm-hmm. There's always going to be bad apples, but majority of police officers do good work. So with that being said, what's your perspective with social media and law enforcement agencies? Do you think they should use it? Do you think they should use it for recruiting? Do you think they should be having like dedicated social media departments? What are your thoughts?
Oh, 100%. They should have social media and they should dedicate it and they should show every single aspect of like when it comes to police work, because of the misconception that they have. So, for example, the city of Miami, Nick Off Duty, he has one of the best social media platforms for his department because he shows like everything when it comes to it.
Right.
And it's all about how you use the social media. What is the intention that you're trying to give, you know? Like right now you have a lot of like TikTok cops.
Yeah.
And
I've seen that out of all the platforms, guys. Come on, we're the police. Like, you gotta be real. You gotta tell them how it is, man. Don't be on TikTok dancing. Come on, guys.
Yeah, like that whole dancing thing, oh my God, I hate it so much.
Yeah.
Because then, especially when it comes to like the females, because then it makes the rest of us that are trying, going to the gym.
Makes you guys look bad,
You know, because now, you know, you think about it, you see me and I'm a cop and I'm a female, and your first thought is the one video that you saw before. It was the other cop that was dancing.
Doing whatever. So they put you in that circle.
Oh, yeah, that's it.
They group you together. You're marked.
Categorized as that, you know?
So yeah, for sure.
It depends on how you use it, what message you're trying to give. Do I think that they need to use it and make like all these trendy videos and singing and all that? No. I think that it should be used to give the public the right information of current events.
Yeah.
I think that it should show like also what the department does, especially in whatever area the department is and what they're focused on when it comes to the community. So like, for example, my community and my department, we do have a lot of elderly people. So we have a lot of elderly people that end up like, for example, missing or that because of, you know, they have dementia, they have Alzheimer's and things like that. So maybe like create a video and like teaching the families how to go about dealing with their elderly that wanders off, you know, whether it's putting like, you know, air tags on their clothing or in their shoes or something like that, you know, it's just an example of things like that. Not necessarily just making a video of like, oh, hey guys, you know, today we're going to have coffee with a cop.
Right.
You know, and I'm not, you know, talking bad about my department social media or anything like that, or any department social media in general. But I think it's just a message that you try to give and how do you deliver it too is very important.
No, I mean, it's the truth, to be honest with you, because like, you know, I wasn't very outspoken on social media. I hate taking selfies, but I do it because, you know, at the end of the day, I got to give the people what they want. And it's more than just selfies, right? I remember when I had just first jumped into digital marketing back in 2020. But by the end of 2021, that first company, we had generated a few million dollars. And then that's when things started getting real, right? Because people were like, bro, you are real. And we like real. And, you know, I was talking about the bad. I was talking about the good. I remember when, I had told you, I had told people I was doing like 250K as a cop. But then they were like, bullshit. Bullshit. And I was just like, and to me, I'm like, bro, I never talk about anything I haven't done. I talk about my experience, right? Because at the age of 37, I've gone through a lot of shit. So my thing is just like, bro, I'm not here, this 21-year-old TikToker with fucking a Lambo trying to flex on you. I'm a grown ass man that's gone through some real shit. Like, if you were to like disrespect me in person, I'd slap the shit out of you. So at the end of the day, when it comes down to it, you know, I have all the proof. And that's what I was able to do. I was able to show the proof. And then people were like, all right, I'll put some respect in your name, bro. Yeah. But when it comes down to it, no, you're absolutely right. I think what you should do, okay, this is my suggestion. And for any police chief, you know, watching this, you know, I got a lot of friends in law enforcement. I still back the blue. You guys are doing God's work. You guys are the best of the best. I love you guys. But to be honest, I think that there should be a group of, you know, officers. Maybe get with that dude Nick, the guy with the channel.
Nick
off duty. Probably get with him and like network, right? But you guys should create a crew, and I would do it, but I'm busy as hell. I would create a crew of cops that know what they're doing on social media. Create an organization where you offer maybe one or two departments free services to monetize the recruitment process and to elevate their brand awareness. And this is an idea that I actually came up with, that I gave it to a friend, but obviously he didn't execute it because he's lazy as hell. And I had told him, I was like, bro, because if you can go ahead and get a case study, let's say with your department, and you're like, hey, I'm gonna do this all for free. I'm gonna get your recruiting numbers up. You're gonna get high tier talent because I'm gonna make you guys go ahead and market you guys at the right light. And then you're gonna get people like, oh shit, I didn't know that I can make this much. This is the potential that you can make. These are the special assignments that you could do. This is absolutely everything that we offer.
You know how much I made last year?
What's up?
$195.
See, that's what I'm talking about. And you're based out here in Florida. That's great money. That's great money, right? Mm-hmm. As coming from an immigrant family, right?
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. You dropped out of college. You know how many college kids right now can't even get a job that's paying them $100,000? Barely anybody. You got people with a college degree going ahead and working at Starbucks, right? Yeah. Not to say there's anything wrong with Starbucks, guys, but at the end of the day, it is what it is, right? So with that being said, right now, I believe you, that dude Nick off duty, like a lot of these officers that are putting out real information out there, not the TikTokers, not the dancers. I mean, that's cool. Do your thing, right? If you're getting paid, get paid. But the people that have real information, what you need to do is you need to network together. You need to build an agency. You need to go ahead and get a few case studies, like a beta launch, okay? Do it for free. Get the numbers up. Once you have the stats, now you have the social proof. Now, guess what? Now you could go to every department and charge them like $100,000 every 3 months for your services. Because you know why? How much does it cost to recruit an officer per department? For my department, it costs them $600,000 to put somebody through an academy, to get them all the way up to a sworn officer. So just imagine if they lose 4 officers a month, which was the normal for my department.
Yep.
How much is that, guys? That is $2.4 million they're losing every single month. You don't think you're actually saving them money? Man, that's some good return on investment right there. That's business, right?
That is business.
That's what I'm talking about. There you go. You can take that, all right?
Let me put that in my back pocket real quick.
I'm just saying. I'm a startup guy.
Give me a pen and paper.
Emilio's like, I got you. Okay, so with that being said, this is called the Level Up Podcast for a reason. Right now, we're currently ranked number one in business in the U.S., guys, thanks to you guys, and thanks to our producer, Emilio. We're looking for sponsors. So what's up, Celsius? Sponsor us. With that being said, okay, this is about self-help. It's about mindset, okay? Yes. You came on this podcast for a reason because I believe in you. I think you have a great story. I think it's really cool that you're a woman in law enforcement because I know how hard it is. My mom was trying to be a cop back in Peru, but they didn't allow her because they didn't allow women police back then.
That's crazy.
Yeah, and then she's like, I'm living through you, son. And that's why she didn't want me to leave the police. But I was like, Mom, I gotta handle business. You know, it's not sustainable. So, with that being said, go ahead, tell the audience, because 100,000 people are going to watch this.
Oh, wow.
And I'm pretty sure your whole department. So 100,000 people are going to watch this. So some words of motivation, you know, You have a strong mindset, you know.
Honestly, my words of motivation is that it's always going to be you versus you.
Mm.
It doesn't matter what else other people are doing, but it's also very important of who you come across with and who your circle is.
Yeah.
So if you want to level up, honestly, mentally, financially. It's all about who you surround yourself with. Because if you are surrounded with successful people, you get a successful mindset. And you believing in yourself is the most important thing. Because when I started with my Instagram and everything, it was all the jokes of like, oh, OnlyFans, right? OnlyFans.
It happens.
And then, hey, but here I am. Look.
That's it. That's it, right? Your network is your net worth. And that's what I always tell people. One person can change your life. So with that being said, where can people find you?
So you can find me on Instagram.
What's your handle?
My handle is at Sergeant Kiba.
Okay.
K-I-B-A. Full Sergeant. Spell it out. You can find me on TikTok. It's the same. And you can find me on Twitch, which is the same handle, at Sergeant Kiba.
And then how often do you stream on Twitch?
Every day.
Every day.
I do every day on TikTok. Usually when I stream on TikTok, it's more related to, I get a lot of like Hispanic people, and they do ask me a lot of questions. Right. So like, oh, I got a ticket. What do I do? Yeah. Or, you know, my registration's expired. What do I do? So I do try to answer those questions because I think that that's very important.
Right.
So like my TikTok is more of like, Q&A. What question would you like to ask a cop if you could?
Okay, kinda, cool. You know? Oh, that's badass. That's a good concept.
So
I like that.
That's my concept when it comes to my TikTok. Because a lot of people like, oh, what do I do if I want to become a cop? Like, how do I go about it? What are the requirements? You know, obviously, everything that I say on my TikTok is through my personal experience and not the opinions of my department.
Of course.
Because I have to clarify that all the time.
Disclaimer.
Now for my stream on my Twitch is more for like the video game side, for like when people want to come and they just want to play and they just want to release and, you know, like just a distressor, you know?
Yeah.
And then on my Instagram, I do try to do like more of like the fitness part, especially since I became a runner at the beginning of the year. My algorithm on TikTok became a lot of like female runners that were killed during running.
Wow.
So I wanted to like emphasize on also on the safety of running because I run with a half vest.
Yeah.
But I carry.
Yeah.
I have my pepper spray and I carry, you know, I have an extra tag on just the vest in case my phone gets lost or dies, you know.
Right.
Things like that because I didn't realize because obviously we have like that, you know, a personality mentality. I was running at 4 o'clock in the morning. I was running at 10 o'clock at night, and I didn't realize that I was running at nighttime.
Because
you know, in my mind, I'm like, you know, I'm a cop. You know, I could anybody.
I'll handle
business.
I'll fight anybody.
But then I was like, let me just be safe.
Right.
You know, so that's also one of the things that you know I started doing on my Instagram. So
yeah, no, that's good. Self awareness. People like that. They really do. Cool, guys. So with that being said, if you want to follow Catherine, she already dropped the handles. Check it down below in the description on YouTube. Also, guys, leave us 5-star review on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. You guys are the reason why we are top 3 in business in the United States currently right now. Guys, we are trying to go ahead and actually grow this even bigger. So share this with a friend. Share this with a family member. Share this with somebody that needs to level up their mindset, okay? You never know who might change your life. With that being said, my name is Paul Alex. This is the Level Up Podcast. We'll catch you on the next one. Thanks for listening up to the Level Up Podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure to share with a family, friend, and everyone you know who's ready to level up. Leave a 5-star review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you tune in. It really helps spreading the word. And don't forget to check out officialpaulalex.com for more episodes and resources to kickstart your journey. Let's level up together.